Oh, I marched to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. Young land started growing, young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore. For I've killed my share of Indians in a thousand different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, saw many more dying, but I ain't marching anymore. Well, it's always the old to lead us to the war. It's always the young to fall. Now look at all we've done with the saber and the gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yeah, I even killed my brothers, so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench, in war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, now they want me back again. Now I ain't marching anymore. Yeah, it's always the old to lead us to the war. It's always the poor who die. Now look how far we've come with the saber and the gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky. I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. 'Cause I saw into the hearts of the president's men. I saw money pound like bodies on the floor. I saw tears traded for dead man's fears, made for the buying, paid by the dying, and I ain't marching anymore. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported network, and they deserve your support. They put on many, many shows, two full audio streams, almost 24/7. And head on over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. And show them some love. Find that donation button. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hi, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wertman, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. So this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, Northern Minnesota, in Cleveland, Ohio, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Madison, Wisconsin, and wherever you are. My recommended list for tonight, one is Christopher Noel YouTube. Impossible Visits is the YouTube channel. The title of this video is called At the Sasquatch Keyhole, Christopher Noel. Also recommended, Scott Creighton YouTube, ChurchDog42 is the channel. The title is Midterm Election Results. Also, listen to Scott Creighton. He's got two videos he did today on the Thousand Oaks shooting. Also recommended, Memory Hole Blog. Title is Revisiting the Parkland Shooting, the David Hogg Interview. Memory Hole Blog, Memory Hole, H-O-L-E, blog.org. And these headlines, Common Dreams, the Common Dreams website. This is not a drill. Demonstrations in over 1,000 cities against Trump's assault on democracy, rule of law. Find this and many more at commondreams.org. From Information Clearinghouse, midterm scorecard reveals massive pro-Israel influence on congressional candidates. Find this and more at informationclearinghouse.info. From the nuclear resistor, come to Nevada, walk for peace, resist nuclear weapons, stand for indigenous rights, fill the jails. That's nukeresistor.org. And finally this, now available, the November edition of Penn Magazine. Today is November 22nd, 1963. Penn Magazine is P-E-N-N, magazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Phil joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. He's a very good columnist, and he posts articles all over the internet. Just search for Philip Ferrugio, and you will see him. His column here is called It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. It's too bad you folks aren't hearing this on Election Day or a day before. That's when I wrote it, but don't step into Tawanka. You know, you remember the old political joke. You know, the candidate goes to an Indian reservation to drum up votes for the upcoming election. The chief greets him and introduces him to the community. The candidate then starts giving a speech filled with mostly false promises, a lot of bluster and praising himself. And each time he pauses, the crowd yells, Tawanka, Tawanka. He goes on and on, each time hearing the same, Tawanka, Tawanka. At the end of the visit, the chief is walking him back to his election van. And as they pass by a corral filled with cattle, the chief says, just be careful not to step into Tawanka. Well, having spent some time in these past few weeks watching a myriad of political debates on C-SPAN, all I can say is Tawanka. Regardless of what congressional seat or what state the seat is in, the formula is always the same. With this two-party, one-party system, both the Republicans and Democrats each have their candidates well-scripted. The Republican ones focused on Trump's needed tax cuts, the ones already passed that overwhelmingly favor the mega-rich, or border security, you know, keep those dangerous spics in, out of here, or repealing Obamacare and substituting it with something more viable to better aid the private insurers who were already well-resourced under Obamacare. And, you know, they purposely did not mention getting rid of Roe v. Wade. That's too dangerous if they want to get those white soccer moms to vote for them. And, of course, they all want to have a strong defense, as if already spending over 50% of the working stiff's tax money is not enough. Their opponents, the good old reliable Democrats, scripted their puppets to have fairer and kinder immigration reform, or keeping a woman's right to choose, or keeping Obamacare, but making it better, as they say, though tens of millions of Americans see no value in it at all right now. Or they want more tax relief for the middle class by rescinding some of the mega millions the super rich now save. Yet they're not really giving much more to hundreds of millions of we working stiffs. And they also want to keep our military spending at the record levels it is now. You know, to keep us safe from the Ruskies who are destroying our democracy. And of course, from the jihadists who Obama and Mrs. Clinton, along with the Bush gang, helped to nurture by our destruction of Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and our instigations into Syria. They also want to target Wall Street, the Democrats, but not too drastically, as their party gets lots of moolah along with their opponents from Wall Street. So you watch these debates, and it can sicken any rational thinking person. Both candidates have to tell the audience how they will fight for the middle class. Of course, this is between the majority of the one-hour event being spent on throwing Tawanka at each other for whatever monies they have been taking from the special interests, a.k.a. the mega-rich corporate and private sources. Foreign policy is never big on the debate agenda, and why should it? After all, both parties are in the pocket of the war economy and, of course, the Israeli Zionists. The preponderance of nearly 1,000 USA military bases overseas and our fighting soldiers worldwide is what both parties support. Even Bernie Sanders, when he ran as a Democratic socialist, failed to hammer home those points. No, this election cycle keeps the conversation on domestic policies. Of course, to anyone who connects the dots, cutting the well over $800 billion a year in military spending or more, and using even 25% for domestic programs, like total national health care for all or real infrastructure repairs, would in one case ease the fear and burden of personal health crisis, and in the other case create millions of well-paying jobs. So this writer, for one, has seen the trend in my beloved country move drastically towards both a fascist and even a neo-Nazi manner. It is quite scary to this baby boomer, even worse than in the turbulent 60s and early 70s. Many friends and colleagues on the left of mine, the left, have disagreed with what I have done as to my recent early ballot voting. In my state of Florida, this far right-wing element has to be stopped. If that meant by me voting for the lesser of two evils Democrats, then so be it this time around. And I did that. If we can curtail that train from leaving the station, good for us. Then we who know better can focus, as always, on protesting this military-industrial empire and the two parties who serve it. Thank you.
And now, on Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my pierogi cart. Grandma Kalashnikov writes on her website her most recent column, "You must either decide to fight or get used to it and just live your routine life. Secrecy is the enemy of the truth. The reason so-called conspiracy theories exist is simply due to government-imposed secrecy, forced by the military force and power of government on duped, unwitting citizens. End the secrecy and you will end most questions, so long as government acts honestly and truthfully and scientifically and ethically. It is dishonesty and corruption and lying and cheating by government which leads to citizens to use their constitutionally protected rights under the precious First Amendment to question such lying and cheating and evidently criminal acts by government officials paid by forced taxation of taxpayers. It is lying and cheating by government which fosters all of this." On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my pierogi cart. And now this is Andy Rooney reporting for the New American Dream Radio Show. Do you ever wonder, well, the kind of people we have running our government? If we really knew the truth, I believe we would be astonished. Forget about George Washington and the cherry tree, Ronald Reagan making America strong again, the George Bushes riding into the baseball game on national TV to throw out the first ball, then sitting in the front row. Forget about Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, the new liberal Democrats who care about you. Forget about Donald Trump, the populist truth hero. SpongeBob, The Simpsons in South Park, Calvin and Hobbes, Snoopy have more to tell us than those guys. At least in the Soviet Union, when they saw nonsense and lies printed in Pravda and TASS, at least they knew they were lies. We are still at the infancy stage in our development of not questioning the lies. And so the next time there is a so-called bombing or a threat of a bombing or a bevy of a bunch of baby blue backpacks found on a bench in Bemidji, the healthy American, the true American, the real American, think CIA, FBI, the police. The real patriot refuses to stand for the national anthem, and rather than another knee-jerk reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance, he says, "Not until I get some questions answered, because this is important stuff." This has been Andy Rooney reporting for the New American Dream Radio Show. Seriously, people, don't you ever wonder? And this just in, we have again received word from Randall from Stevens Point. Randall from Stevens Point is underground in America.
I got my gun in my truck. Told you I'm headed for the woods, staying up a mountain. That's where I am right now. I can see y'all from here right through my scope. Don't worry, I got the safety on. Well, it's on now. Tell Bubby Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. got on my camo jeans, you'd never find me. When you hear about the big shootout, all that, that'll be me. Before he gets started, he wanted us to again relay this message. Now, first, I got something to say to my relatives in Baraboo. Really not talking to any of you, because, you know why. Randall's note continues. America had an independent media. Election would have been about the American police state, based on the 9/11 lie, weapons of mass destruction lie, the use of chemical weapons lie, the Iranian nukes lie, the Russian invasion of Ukraine lie was accepted by the insouciant Americans. Those responsible for these lies, which have caused massive war crimes for which U.S. administration should be indicted, are fake dead and rich. The rest of us experience the loss of civil liberty, privacy, and the individual in the way the police state is mowed down. America had an independent media. The election would have been about the 20 years of U.S. and NATO-EU war crimes against Serbia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Libya, Pakistan, Syria, Yemen. About U.S. and NATO support for Israel war crimes against the remnant of the Palestinian people. U.S. and NATO-EU support for the neo-Nazi regime established by the Obama regime in Ukraine to commit war crimes against the breakaway Russian provinces, populations of which refuse to become victims of Washington's overthrow of the democratic-elected Ukrainian government, and installation by America's first black president of a neo-Nazi regime. If America had an independent media, the election would be about the orchestrated demonization of Iran. Completely stupid dope that Trump appointed Secretary of State declared, well, the utter fool should not be permitted to open his mouth, declared that Washington was going to drive Iran into the ground unless the government agreed to behave like a normal state. What does Pompeo mean by a normal state? He means a state that takes its marching orders from Washington. Iran's not invaded any country. Government in power is the continuation of the government that overthrew the Shah, a dictator imposed on Iran by Washington, when Washington and London overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran. What the despicable Pompeo is really saying is Iran has to go because Iran, like Syria, is in the way of Israel's expansion into southern Lebanon because Iran and Syria supply the Hezbollah militia, which has twice defeated Israeli invasions of southern Lebanon. The vaunted Israeli army is only good for murdering women and children in the disarmed Gaza ghetto. If America had an independent media, someone would ask Pompeo precisely what Iran is doing that warrants Washington unilaterally, in the face of opposition of the European, Russian, and Chinese signatories, whatever, to the Iran nuclear agreement, pulling out of the agreement, imposing sanctions that no other country on the planet except Israel supports. But of course, America has no independent media. It's a collection of horrors known as NPR, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, MSCBS, Fox News, etc. Without an honest independent media, there is no accountability of government. America has no honest and independent media. Therefore, in America, there is no accountability of government. Unless the American people rise up in armed rebellion, they're finished as a free people. And of course, they cannot rise up in armed rebellion. My conclusion, America is doomed. People, with few exceptions, are not smart enough to continue to exist.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. So people get ready, there's a train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key, open the doors and board them. There's hope for all among those love the most. There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. Have pity on those whose chances grow thinner. There's no hiding place against the kingdom's throne. So people get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. Later in the show, we'll be hearing from Frank Cordero, Jim Fetzer, and Thomas Wortman. Stay tuned. Thanks again for joining us tonight. And remember, Revolution Radio is listener supported. And they do deserve your support. Head on over to freedomslips.com, find that donation button, and use it. Tell them you heard about them on the New American Dream radio show. Thanks. See you after the station break.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank works with the poor. He founded a Des Moines Catholic Worker several decades ago. He is also a former Catholic priest, and also served time in county jail and federal prisons for fighting against the U.S. military machine. And now we'll get to hear the conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Hello.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
Hi, I moved to the preferred place on the front hallway with all the photos and stuff.
Okay.
Halfway up the staircase. And folks are going, Bobby's going through some clothes here. So I'm in a kind of a secured place, whatever that means, for a conversation with you.
Okay, great.
It's a very familiar place. So, the election's over.
Yeah.
And now we move into another act in this
down
national
here,
soap opera.
Yeah, down here in Florida, it's not quite over. They're recounting.
Oh, yes. But the main attraction, you know, is how soon are we going to get rid of Trump? So
yeah.
It looks like the case will be made in the next 2 years, I'm betting that he'll be so dirty.
Get rid of the gangsta. The gangster from New York, who's
lower than the mafia. From the mafia, because this is real estate in New York. These people are cutthroat, ugly, no ethics. I mean, this is the known facts.
Yeah.
That's what the business is. It's not even capitalism. Even billionaires are chucking off from the way this guy did. The president, it manifests our national madness and disease. Openly, it's a wake-up call for folks. It's hard to tell. You know, I've been surprised that wake-up calls haven't been working since the 70s, when at least I began to understand the ramification of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And how inevitable an immediate death can be to us. And people just don't seem to want to wake up to that either. So waking up is a big problem for Americans for all my adult life, all of it.
Oh.
And we're like sleepwalking in this empire.
Yeah,
and it just gets worse and worse. So it's and crazier and crazier. And can you believe Donald Trump is president? No,
I know
but
it.
Here he is.
I know it. Yeah.
It's just amazing. However, the good news is I'm recovering from my trying to recover from my cynicism.
Okay.
Age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I We're doing, I'm doing Enneagram work with Jess and Ruby and Julie and others in the community who are trying to mend. And we're going through our numbers, and I'm an 8. People out there who know about this thing, there are 9 personality characters. Do you have a characteristic you know about, Chuck, in the Enneagram? Do you have a number?
I don't know about that. I might have to check it out.
Oh, you gotta check it out, and it's a it's something a number of Catholic worker communities are doing to help everybody live with each other, given their personality traits. It's a very
really
helpful tool in some respect. Yeah, so that's something we're doing to heal ourselves right now, and it's helpful for me. It's very descriptive. 8, I'm an 8. Liberation theology, Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi. Those types of people and energy are the 8 social justice folks. However, one thing about a personality trait like an 8, you don't want the 8s to be kings, because when the 8s are kings, they're awful. You know, they don't let anybody break their rules. They chop off people's heads. It's terrible. So that's not to make me king. So I can live with that. I act out my 8 energy in a circle of people I live with, and we do the works of mercy, and they beat the hell out of me just as they should, because 8s need to be put in their place and at the same time lifted up for the good they do.
I hate to tell you, Frank, but I have a feeling you're probably not destined to be king anyway.
No, you're right. My opportunities are gone too. Okay, I understand that. I'm just saying it could have happened.
Actually, I mean, hey, anything could happen. Look who we got as president, anything right? Anything could happen.
Yeah.
Well,
should I let you go and I will pick it up next week?
Well, I don't know. If you like, I mean, sure. I always enjoy hearing from you, Frank, and you know, wherever it happens to go. I think I kind of interrupted you. I didn't mean to. I was just.
Okay. Let me take this as a phase two about an announcement. I just nailed down a major speaker for our Feast of the Holy Innocents retreat here in Des Moines.
Oh, really?
It's December 27th and 28th. It's called the Feast of the Holy Innocents. It's a Catholic thing. It's a Christmas feast, and it highlights the story of the children, babies, Bethlehem, who were slain by Herod's death squad.
Yes.
In hopes to kill the infant Jesus, who had to grab refugee status on the run to Egypt. It's all there in the text of Matthew.
Yeah.
And we do this retreat, and we connect it with our witness and demonstration at the Drone Command Center. You know, the Three Kings, they followed a star that basically led Herod's death squad to Bethlehem in an attempt to kill the babe. That's how Christmas was celebrated. And we believe we do that all the time with our drone command. And we don't need a fabricated star from heaven with knowledge where to go. We have all this space stuff. And we can now kill people from space. Don't even need the damn star. But we're doing Herod's work. And we're killing children and babies and people with this shit. So that's the connection. We got a scripture scholar named Wes Howard Brook. He wrote the book called Coming Out of Empire, which is a very critical book on how to frame the conflict, the major conflict that's going on within all of the books of the Bible, from Genesis to Book of Revelation. It's really good stuff. And it's, I wrote the book review on his important book about coming out of empire. And it's the premise is that there's basically a conflict between two types of gods. The god of empire, which blesses armies and kings, and kings like David, and cities and temples. And then there's the god of creation that creates the world, not for a king or a dynasty or a temple, but in a garden and with human beings. There's a counter thread to all of the texts between these two conflicting deity allegiances. And the principle, the basis is this conflict is resolved with Jesus, who basically says, no more god of empire.
Hmm.
God's love no longer depends on any city, any temple, any priesthood.
Hmm.
That's all old God stuff. That's gone. Now, the new God is the God who lives with the people, with the poor, the disadvantaged. The new God, the new face of God, is the one that's on the cross, not putting up a fight, but speaking the truth. And those kinds of images of human images are so abundant in our culture. At the other end of the U.S. boot, and the throats of people all over the world. And that's kind of the way we want to study this text, make it that connection. And then, anyone who wants to come to Des Moines, December 27th, 28th, for this Feast of the Holy Innocents retreat, get a hold of us. All right?
Well,
how's that sound?
That sounds great. I tell you, if I were closer, I'd be there.
Oh, yeah. And if you weren't in Florida, you'd be here. But
exactly,
if I were in Florida,
yeah,
I wouldn't think about coming to Iowa in the middle of the
Well, yeah, there is that. Yes.
Yes, of course. Fair enough. All right. We'll see you.
Frank, thank you so much. God bless.
Sure,
bye-bye.
Jeff, bye-bye. God bless.
And now, this just in two. We hear from Barbara Bubba, traveling with her family on their We Just Want a RV on the Price is Right world tour, as the Bubbas are just now pulling in for pizza in Thousand Oaks, California. Barbara Bubba is typing away as she sits on the roof, secured by her feet and a new roll of duct tape. She's been up there since Long Beach because the twins, Bubba Bubba, both farted at the same time.
I haven't been writing about the U.S. midterms much because I don't care about that nonsense anymore. Whole thing's a fake pro wrestling performance staged every couple of years to give a heavily armed populace an illusory sense they have some degree of control over the things their government does. No matter who won on Tuesday, the wars are guaranteed to continue. Oligarchs are guaranteed to keep siphoning more and more money out of the pockets of ordinary Americans. Opaque and unaccountable intelligence agencies are guaranteed to continue expanding intrusive surveillance practices, narrative control psyops in collaboration with powerful Silicon Valley corporations. And we are guaranteed to keep hurtling toward climate catastrophe on the back of an economic system which requires infinite growth on a finite planet. Only thing that might change a tiny bit is America may be temporarily having a government which pretends to care about oppressed minorities sometimes. If the Democratic Party were a real political party, a party which advances popular agendas in order to get its members elected to the government the way kids are taught in school, it would now be celebrating massive landslide of victories. Last 2 years would have been spent promoting the virally popular agendas of the Bernie Sanders movement, like single-payer health care, getting money out of politics. After a thorough and radically honest autopsy of everything that went so catastrophically wrong in 2016. Instead, what did Democrats do? Spent the last two years babbling about Russiagate conspiracy theories, then in a tacit admission that they've never believed a word of that nonsense, suddenly went completely silent on the issue before midterms, and switch to the We're Not Trump platform. Oh, yeah. And they're telling Green Party candidates to drop out. Democrats have done almost nothing in the last 2 years to fight the Republicans in any way that ensures victory. Using his personal Twitter account, conservative media lackeys, and an army of sycophants, Trump has completely dominated the narrative that his presidency has been a godsend for the economy. Fighting this narrative should have been Democrats' first and foremost priority from day one, which would have been extremely easy to do since the narrative is entirely false. Job growth has continued on the trajectory it's been since 2012. Ordinary Americans don't have any more money in their pockets than before. The wealth has stayed at the top, no matter how much the economy has grown. Or war. Simply taken for granted that Democrats aren't going to campaign against war, but how easy would it be for them to win elections if they did? There's no shortage of footage and statistics which could be used to attack this administration's unforgivable rate of civilian casualties from airstrikes, its expansion of military presence in Syria, Afghanistan, and Africa, its horrifying escalations against a nuclear superpower in Russia, its continued facilitation of the worst humanitarian crisis in the world in Yemen, and its depraved implementation of starvation sanctions against Iran. Democrats could have been shoving these horrors into the public eye since January 2017, and it would have not only galvanized liberals and leftists against Trump, but also crippled his appeal with the anti-interventionist paleocons, libertarians, and nationalists on the right. But of course, they did not, because that would have alienated their war profiteer sponsors. Instead of advancing popular positions to win the votes of the majority, as kids are taught happens in school, all Democrats are doing currently is attacking the Republicans over Trump's obnoxious tweets and generally successful anti-immigrant fear-mongering. Since both parties support all oligarchic agendas in essentially the same ways, the only wiggle room Democrats have left is on issues the billionaire class doesn't care about, like racism and other forms of bigotry. They do not care. To be clear as day to everyone by now, why don't they care? Because a pro wrestler gets paid the same whether his character wins the match or loses it. U.S. politics work nothing remotely like how kids are taught in school. The difference is night and day. If the American education system really wanted kids to learn about the way their electoral system actually functions, teachers would bribe student government candidates with monopoly money to betray the interest of their classmates. Whichever candidate accepted the most bribes would get advertised on the school PA system as the clear and obvious choice to vote for.
And now for another episode of Waterboarding Henry Kissinger, sponsored by Mr. Bubble. If we're going to torture people who we say we think are terrorists, but we know are not really terrorists because we did 9/11, there are no terrorists, no Al-Qaeda, no reason for war, and really no information we can gain other than to perpetuate the lie, go deeper into the story of the lie, build and embellish the lie fable, then why not also waterboard people who we know are terrorists? Who were in fact our terrorists, who helped us to lie a long time ago and overturn our own country, and this terrorist really knows the truth. And what he knows is actually real. One or two or maybe three quick sessions, which are not really such a big deal anyway, right, would change the course of this whole country. Just one little goon afternoon, live on national TV, on the Upper West Side, maybe Central Park on a nice summer morning. Skateboarders, joggers, mothers pushing strollers. It could be a beautiful American experience, something for Ken Burns. The committee to waterboard Henry Kissinger, who worked to overthrow the elected administration of Chile President Salvador Allende because his administration was not marching to the beat of Washington's drum, killing thousands of people, subverting democracy, not giving a damn, being praised in America and continuing to live free in America, not in Leavenworth or Attica or Lewisburg. And that's a crime in itself. I know, right? The committee to waterboard Henry Kissinger, it's not really that bad anyway, endorsed by Alan Dulles, Dick Cheney, George Bush Jr., George Bush Sr., John Yoo, Barack Obama, two dental assistants, four Walmart produce managers, and millions of folks like you. Sponsored by Mr. Bubble. Get you so clean, your mother won't know you. The committee to waterboard Henry Kissinger is also affiliated with and endorsed by the committee to waterboard Mount Rushmore, Barbara Bush, and Thane Eugene Caesar. And for what reason, we have no idea. We would also like to shout out to those men and women serving in 10,000 countries and municipalities, islands, peninsulas, knolls, glens, gullies, inlets, deltas, fjords, and firths overseas, serving in Berlin and Aachen and Baden and Pfaffen and und Dierdorf und Daden und Dascher und Pranzer und Donder and Blitzen. We need you. For what reason, we have no idea. But thank you for all you do, and we are pleased to send you 50% of our tax dollars. For what reason, we have no idea. But because you are there, and they thank you at ball games and on beer commercials, we thank you for all you do. For what reason, we have no idea. And now a word from New American Dream bowling writer Jeffrey Lebowski, Brian Williams' greatest lie. No controversy ensued when Williams and NBC colleague Tom Brokaw repeatedly upheld the Warren Commission's lone assassin conspiracy theory. NBC once suspended Brian Williams for 6 months for lying. The fashionable anchor admitted to lying about being involved in a life-threatening combat situation while reporting in Iraq over a decade ago. Yet, a survey of Williams' career indicates that this isn't the first time he's been dishonest with the American people. In one important instance, while broadcasting from Dallas, Texas, Williams began the NBC Nightly News by remarking, "We're in Dealey Plaza, just across from the sixth-floor window in the Texas School Book Depository Building where three shots were fired 50 years ago today that changed the course of American history." The statement flies in the face of honest reportage by upholding the powerful myth devised by the Warren Commission that former U.S. Marine and intelligence operative Lee Harvey Oswald was the principal assassin in President Kennedy's murder. The American public can now point to overwhelming evidence presented by Attorney Mark Lane, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, the U.S. Congress, and a host of other researchers indicating that the three shots fired from the Texas School Book Depository was a CIA-contrived conspiracy theory. In fact, at least three sharpshooter teams killed Kennedy and wounded Texas Governor John Connally in Dealey Plaza in a triangulated crossfire. Later in this November 22, 2013 broadcast, Williams introduced fellow NBC anchor Tom Brokaw. On November 22nd in 1963, Williams begins, "Tom Brokaw was a young reporter in Omaha. He read the news of the assassination on the air, in fact." Amazingly, after 50 years, Brokaw had yet to exercise journalistic due diligence by publicly questioning the implausible government cover story suggesting that Oswald killed Kennedy. Nor does Brokaw take the opportunity to do so during this broadcast, thus perpetuating one of the U.S. government's greatest lies. Thus, two of America's most prominent journalists flagrantly misled the American public on this notable 2013 broadcast, yet no controversy surrounds their truly astounding assertions. Perhaps we need to ask, how differently would Williams or Brokaw behave as official press agents for the U.S. government? Brian Williams' deception points to a larger truth. A major career journalist's incorrect or embellished personal recollections are the stuff of controversy, while, in contrast, when it comes to the country's most momentous events, from the JFK assassination to 9/11, the war on terror, weapons of mass destruction, star journalists are compelled to spread and perpetuate massive lies. so long as those falsehoods are sanctioned and promoted by America's national security state, these celebs are allowed to proceed without question. Indeed, such figures are lauded for their journalistic service. The public be damned.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on a summer breeze. Skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me. I can't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. I won't let you leave. I won't let you leave my love behind. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on a summer breeze. Skipping over the ocean like a stone.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Schneider will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Jim Fetzer. Dr. Jim Fetzer is a retired philosophy professor. He's a researcher, a radio show host, a writer. He joins us each month from Madison, Wisconsin. And now we're going to hear from Jim Fetzer.
Mike, Chuck, it's great to be with you guys again. Everyone knows, of course, that the Republicans have retaken control of the House and that they're going to besiege the Trump administration with subpoenas and investigations, even though it would be much better for the country if they were to legislate rather than to investigate. Many have also heard, no doubt, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has fallen and broken three ribs. She's in very bad shape physically. I observed an interview she did recently where she couldn't raise her head from her chest. And it looks to me as though she ought to have resigned when Obama retired, when Obama was president. That trying to hang on is pointless. And this, of course, is going to drive the Democrats to the absolute level of hysteria over the prospect of Donald Trump appointing yet one more conservative judge to the Supreme Court. Indeed, many commentators have observed that keeping the Senate and increasing their margin in the Senate, which fell within the scope of my prediction of 3 to 5, picking up 3 to 5 members in the Senate, is going to pan out. And while I believe the House was going to stay even, nevertheless, what we had here was the Democrats taking control, where there seems to be a backstory. In fact, if you go to my new blog now, which is jamesfetzer.org, you can read a wonderful article I've republished from State of the Nation, Revenge of the Rhinos, How the Republican House Defeat Was Engineered by the Deep State. This is truly fascinating. I'm going to summarize parts of it, read parts of it, so you understand what's going on. Various black ops were also cunningly implemented to ensure the Democrats won the House. In light of the extraordinary political successes enjoyed by President Trump during his first 2 years, the midterms should either have maintained or strengthened the Republican majority in the House. Not only did that not happen, the swing to Democratic control is quite dramatic thus far. Why did this really take place? Now, just look, the economy is thriving. Employment is up. Unemployment is down, including among Black and Latinos. Trump's approval rating among blacks is up to 40%, which is historic. His approval rating nationally is at 50% by the most recent Rasmussen polls. He ought to have maintained House control by the GOP handily. So what happened? Well, they seem to have ferreted it out. This is in the executive editor of State of the Nation. It looks as though it was the transparent agents of deep state, the rhinos, those are Republicans in name only and never Trumpers, who conspired, according to the non-negotiable dictates of the shadow government, in order to bring this about. The most obvious election cycle dynamic that set up the GOP loss in the House was the highly unusual exodus of Republican House members. Unusual because many of them were given strict orders by their deep state overlords not to run again. 36 Republicans opted not to seek re-election. That's a lot of incumbents who are practically guaranteed a victory if they seek re-election. The vast majority of them were either lifelong rhinos or never Trumpers, and their collective decisions not to keep their states put the GOP in a huge bind. Many of these folks waited relatively late in the election cycle to exit, putting a lot of pressure on the Republican Party to identify and field highly qualified candidates. Some of them, not seeking re-election, were literally forced out by their deep state handlers. They were quite carefully selected based on the likelihood of their district flipping into the blue column. There are various ways to compel resignation, such as threats of exposure of previous Pedogate activity, where I'm very, very much of the belief that a lot of the Pizzagate revelations are going to come forward now, that the replacement of Sessions is a key development here, that we're going to have the revelation of the FISA documents that are going to discredit many players, even in the House of Representatives, people like Adam Schiff, of whom you've heard so much. Listen now to this inventory from State of the Nation. Each of these CIA-coordinated operations was a deliberate attempt to rig the election in favor of the Democrats. Kavanaugh character assassination plot to associate Trump with alleged sexual abuse. False flag bomb psyops perpetrated against Democratic figures to blame a Trump supporter. Hurricane Michael, a geo-engineered superstorm and weather bomb, dropped on the right-leaning Florida panhandle to eliminate Republican voters. Khashoggi assassination plot to tarnish Trump administration because of its association with Saudi Arabia, with Saudi savagery. False flag mass shooting at the Pittsburgh synagogue conducted to blame Trump for national division. The Honduran caravan set as a blue wave of illegal aliens to perform unlawful voting for Democratic candidates. The hot yoga shooting and false flag operation in Tallahassee, where the alleged right-leaning assailant carried out a November jolt. And remember, too, we had a shooting in Kentucky. Notice how these are being targeted for specific groups, the synagogue shooting Jews in Kentucky, the shooting of elderly black people in Tallahassee, the shooting of suburban women. This is not a coincidence. This is engineered. The fact is that they have flipped the election far enough that now, although historically it was a modest gain, in my opinion, it wouldn't have occurred at all but for the machinations of the deep state. And believe me, there was more to it as well, including, of course, the Parkland shooting. I've reported about it extensively here. One of the fascinating interviews was Kelsey Prind, who said, on report on CNN, it was like a movie. It looked so real, but it felt so fake. I have played before the 52-second video we have from inside one of the classrooms, where you can actually see that the body on the floor is a training dummy. It has no head. It has no arms lying on a pool of fake blood. And while this is supposed to be an urgent situation, and you have a girls there who are trying their best to cry as though they were really in fear. One is worried about her bottled water, another on her iPod. A kid is pulling his putts. You got people in police uniforms rushing in and out, and you might suppose the Parkland police were Johnny on the spot, but Parkland gave up its police force in 2004. In fact, it turns out they had, you know, shooters in full SWAT gear, but they were firing simunition, which is simulated ammunition made out of beeswax and laundry detergent. It'll create a welt, but it doesn't even penetrate the skin, which is why we had the miraculous survival of a number of Parkland students who claimed to have been shot in the stomach, in the torso. If it had been by, an AR-15, they wouldn't be walking around with Band-Aids on their wound. They would be 6 feet under. So this is all significant. I have just published today, just before coming on the air with you, The Parkland Puzzle, How the Pieces Fit Together, my latest book edited, where we brought together 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, a dozen experts, including several PhDs, converging in their findings. I recommend you check it out. But that's not all. Also in the background, Russian collusion. It was Hillary Clinton all along. Russian investigation is beginning to look as if claims of monstrous collusion between Russian officials and U.S. political operatives were true. But it wasn't Donald Trump who was guilty of Russian collusion. It was Hillary Clinton and U.S. intelligence officials who worked with Russians and others to entrap Trump. That's a stunning conclusion of a Real Clear Investigations report by Lee Smith, who looked in depth at the controversial June 2016 Trump Tower meeting between officials of then-candidate Donald Trump's campaign staff and a Russian lawyer known to have ties with high-level officials in Vladimir Putin's government. The media have spun a tale of Trump selling his soul to the Russians for campaign dirt to use against Hillary, beginning with the now infamous Trump Tower meeting. But there's a growing body of evidence indicating the meeting may have been a setup, part of a broad effort to tarnish the Trump campaign, involving Hillary Clinton operatives employed by Kremlin-linked figures and Department of Justice officials. Indeed, we have much more forthcoming on this. If you want to read a brilliant book explaining the whole thing, try The Russia Hoax by Greg Jarrett. You can find it on Amazon. That's not the only revelation we have forthcoming, by the way. Where Hillary, as you may or may not recall, sold off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia for a $145 million donation to the Clinton Foundation, which required the approval of Barack Obama. This was completely outrageous. But the Senate Judiciary Committee has just released a 414-page report demonstrating no evidence to support the accusations against Kavanaugh, where committee investigators spoke with 45 individuals, took 25 written statements, no support whatsoever, all fabricated, all to put Trump in a box. But the Kavanaugh hearing, like the caravan, which is like a political commercial for the wall, have backfired. But for their other machinations here, I think Trump would have held the House handily, even increased the number of GOP. But it didn't happen, and now you know the reason why. Thanks so much for featuring me once again, Chuck and Mike. Great to be here with you.
And now a word from National Public Radio. Good old Reverend Bob, Miss Thompson, your fifth grade teacher, the police, the tired old editor strolling down the street after a long day at the office, the Democratic Party, the American Legion, the Boy Scouts, and Mom and Dad, all the people you trust to tell you the truth. If a plane would have hit the Pentagon, we would have seen that short film 1,000 times by now in Chevrolet commercials and Miller beer commercials and on commercials somehow juxtaposing the Pentagon, puppy pellets, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Popemobile. So no plane hit the Pentagon. And because we know that from the lack of Popemobile prevarications, we can be sure that Bush, Rove, Rumsfeld, et al. Are liars and murderers. And we can include a bunch more folks in there as well. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the nice Obama family across the street. They all know the truth and refuse to tell us. And that's the truth. And I don't care what happens to me. It's just important that you know. This has been a word from National Public Radio. Good old Reverend Bob. Miss Thompson, your fifth grade teacher, the tired old editor strolling down the street after a long day at the office, the police, the Democratic Party, the American Legion, the Boy Scouts, and Mom and Dad, all the people you trust to tell you the truth. Occupy Dealey Plaza. That's where it all began. November 22nd, 1963, about 12:30 p.m. 55 years ago this year, filled Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking, and let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers and their sniper rifles and double secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America. Our next guest of the show is Thomas Wertmann. Thomas Wertmann is the director of the Ohio MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. And we look forward to hearing from Thomas each month. So now we're going to try and contact Thomas Wertmann, director of the Ohio Mutual UFO Network in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello.
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. If you remember last month, I was talking a little bit about interviewing a witness at Wright-Patterson, and then coincidentally, years later, coming across a story about a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic who reportedly conducted an autopsy on aliens down here. Well, what I want to do is back up a little bit in my story and go back and give you a little bit more history about myself and some other things I've come across on here. Back in the 1960s, I had my own personal experiences regarding seeing an object up close, a UFO hovering above treetops when I lived in South Carolina. And it was definitely above the treetops. It was a disc-shaped object, silverish in color, reflecting the light on a sunny afternoon. I was with a friend. I never told my friend what I saw. I just kept looking up, staring at this thing. And later on, he had another story that he told me about encountering some being that he described as being an owl in the woods. Well, after that time frame, I started reading every book I could on UFOs, digesting everything I could for years. And we moved from South Carolina back to Ohio, where I'm located at now. And one of my friends about that time, he saw he was reading all these UFO books and talking about things about UFOs. And he says, you know, he says, my brother happens to be a security in security detail down at Wright-Patterson Air Force. He's in the Air Force. I said, really? So what's he do? He says, well, he's in military police. And at one point, he was guarding a hangar down there. I said, really? He goes, yeah, he says, and he was told that if anybody got inside of this hangar, kill him. I said, what? He says, yeah, they said, shoot anybody who got inside this hangar. Well, he wouldn't pin down any number or exact location of the hangar, so I had was this interesting story for years. So that's when I got contacted by MUFON to interview a witness who was describing an event down at Wright-Patterson. I was even more enthused. When they contacted me initially, MUFON was under the understanding that they actually had a live alien at that time down at Wright-Patterson when the witness observed it. And that was why they were really interested. As a matter of fact, when they went to send me down, they were actually very worried about somebody potentially following me, somebody potentially interfering with me in some way on what I was doing down here. So they made sure they had communication with me all the way down and all the way back. Well, as I was talking a little bit about last month, when I met the witness at a public place at a restaurant, one thing that struck me really strange was his wife was with him, and not just the wife was with him, but his wife looked at me like I was actually an alien on there, Chuck. I mean, she gave me this look up and down, up and down, up and down. I'm like, okay, what's going on, man? And she says, well, I see the weirdest aura around your body that I've never seen before. And the witness himself says, well, just so that you know, he says, my wife is has psychic abilities. I said, really? He said, yeah. So we sat down. I went through a number of questions with him on it regarding where the aliens were potentially located at on the base. And I pulled out maps of the base from that time frame. And he didn't want to really point out where the locations were. Now, he's very open about some of his other discussions, but he was kind of a little bit secretive about that. And he was more in depth about describing the room that they were in rather than the exact location. And as I mentioned last month, he described the room as being in a morgue, actually, at the base, part of the hospital, and that the aliens, as he thought, were being stored in a vault in the morgue. And he says he'd observed this vault in the morgue that looked like it had a haphazard lock welded over the vault itself to keep somebody from getting into it. He says it looked like just somebody came in there with a welder and welded this thing on overnight for some reason. This thing had been sealed all this time. Then one day when he walked in, the vault was open, and that's when he saw the alien laying on a table in there. He says it definitely was not human. It appeared to be a gray. It was dead, and he says they were performing an autopsy on this being. He says military personnel were around along with others. Well, he said it was just a short experience. He got ordered to get the heck out, and that's what he did. Well, I tried to get more, as much information from him as I could. Who is the base commanders? Who is his commander? We went through a lot of general questions like that, and he was nailing all those right on the money, because my research pointed out everybody who claimed it was on that base that time was on the base that time. And he also had his paperwork documenting what he'd been doing. The whole time he was talking about his event, though, his wife kept looking at me in the strangest way. She looked at me and kept staring at me off and on, and I never talked about my own personal background. We just kept talking about his. Well, this interview went on for 2 hours, and once we wrapped it up, I went to say goodbyes to him on air. She looked at me and she says, you know, they're not done with you. I said, who do you mean done with me? She says, you know who I'm talking about. They're not done with you. I can tell. Well, she was referring to my own personal encounters with craft, of which I never told her that after my encounters with the craft, I'd gone through a series of regressions myself that indicated experiences relating back to abduction. Well, she was referring to those, and I'd never mentioned anything to her about those. I'm like, how did she know they had experiences like that in the past? Maybe there is something to her psychic abilities on there. Well, then years later, here I go. I can encounter a group in Cleveland I joined up with. And lo and behold, here comes out the story again of a doctor who is very secretive about what he did as a hobby out there, per se, that he was involved with a UFO organization. He kept that information from the hospital. He kept that information from people in the group to a large degree. He didn't let them know what he did. But then all of a sudden, here comes a story out through only a couple sources that said he was actually summoned to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with a number of other individuals who were all doctors. And they seemed to have their own specialties on there. And they were told to examine this being within their own areas of expertise, create a report based on their areas of expertise, submit the report, and then, as the old saying goes, forget everything that happened this weekend. Well, I was trying to tie together, and I haven't tied it together yet, to see if the individual I interviewed that has experience back in the 80s and 90s was actually in that same area where this doctor was a number of years later performing the autopsy, or if their time frames actually didn't overlap. That I've not been able to pin down since the doctor has passed away. But there's interesting things coming out along the way. The doctor himself was a pathologist. That was his field of study at Cleveland Clinic, which is one of the top hospitals in the nation for that particular area. He had documents, in this case, he supposedly put back that nobody's ever been able to locate. Did he mention he did have pictures? He had some other things he put back. Nobody's been able to track those things down. It's almost like those things now have disappeared. And if he was conducting an autopsy or involved with an autopsy down there, maybe individuals followed up, obtained that information, and basically made the story disappear. But I'm not going to give up on this one. I'm going to keep trying to track down individuals who may have known this particular doctor or been down at Wright-Patterson Air Force during the same time frame on there. A continuation of my story on there, I've also had other individuals come up and tell me similar things about psychic abilities. One night on there, Chuck, I was doing a UFO program of all places from the pulpit of a church. There is a group that invited me in. It was actually a Rotary Club to do a talk on UFOs. And I went in, so here I am up on, of all places, the pulpit, and I kind of felt like the Antichrist up there that night talking about UFOs in the church. Well, we went through, we actually had about 50 people in there that night, 50 to 60 people. And I'm going through describing, in this case, different UFO cases, but I never gave any light to my own personal background. And lo and behold, after the talk, this woman comes up again. Again, I can't vouch for her claims, but she says, I am a psychic. I said, really? She goes, yeah. And she goes, you know, when I'm watching you, she goes, you have the strangest aura I've ever seen around the body. I said, like what? She goes, the color is extremely unusual. She goes, I've never seen anybody in my life with that same type of aura around it. And she goes, I don't know why. So now here I've got two different people claiming to be psychics, again, I'll put that in quotation marks. I don't know for sure. I can't verify that. But they're looking at me saying, you know, hey, you've got a very strange aura. One saying, by the way, I know you've had encounters in the past and they're not done with you yet. They're going to keep on continuing. But on that note, strangely enough, I had another individual contact me who said, you know, Tom, I've got a friend of mine that I happened to be talking to the other day that has gone through some regressions, and she was talking about being on board of a craft. And she was describing this tall guy, and she goes, everything I've started describing about her, or she started describing about him, it sounded like you. So what I did is I got a series of pictures out, and I put your photographs in with those
phones. We're out of time, unfortunately. I have to finish this next time, but
next month again.
I waited as long as I could, because man, that was amazing. And so you're on board the ship, eh? Wow, very interesting.
Yeah. We can talk about that later. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Next time. Thank you very much for being with us. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Zero X E 0513. talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we've been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. From Smedley Butler in Virginia, we get this. There are a number of distinctly American symbols that evoke feelings of pride, nationalism, and patriotism. There is the Constitution. There are monuments like Mount Rushmore, the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument, and the Jefferson Memorial. There are structures like the Statue of Liberty and the Liberty Bell. There are buildings like the White House and the Capitol. There are also things that there are many of: American flags, bald eagles, dollar bills, and images of Uncle Sam and the Great Seal of the United States. Lately, these symbols have all been superseded by one image that is so powerful and so overwhelming that it drives some Americans to tears and causes others to act in the most nonsensical and irrational of ways. I'm referring to a military uniform, not just any military uniform, of course, but one of the United States Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines. No symbol is more sacred in American life right now than the military uniform. The cross is divisive, the flag has been put to partisan struggle, but the uniform commands nearly automatic and universal reverence. In Congress, as on television, generals are treated with awed respect, service members spoken of as if they were saints. Liberals are especially careful to make the right noises, obeisance to the uniform having become the shibboleth of patriotism, as anti-communism used to be. Across the political spectrum, throughout the media, in private and public life, the pieties and ritual declarations are second nature now. Warriors, heroes, mission, our young men and women in uniform, our brave young men and women, our finest young people. So common has this kind of language become, we scarcely notice it anymore. All military personnel are now heroes. Sporting events have turned into military worship services. Discounts galore are now offered to military personnel. At many airlines, military personnel board the planes first, along with the first-class passengers. There are announcements in airports welcoming home military personnel and thanking them for all they do to keep us safe. Parents put bumper stickers on their cars that mention that their son or daughter is serving in the military. Businesses proclaim their support for the troops on their signs and in their advertisements. Military personnel who wear their uniforms out in public are stopped and thanked for their service. Patriotism is now equated with admiration for the military. And, of course, the big lie that the troops are defending our freedom is repeated morning, noon, and night. The cult of the uniform has spread to churches as well. The cult of the uniform is at its worst when it comes to U.S. servicemen fighting senseless, unjust, immoral, and unconstitutional wars. The presence or absence of a uniform is all that it takes to not hold or hold someone responsible for destruction of person and property. It is okay for someone to put on a military uniform and kill someone halfway around the world who was no threat to America, but it is murder if the same person killed someone here in the United States.
A terrorist is anyone who detonates a bomb, unless he is wearing a U.S. military uniform. Americans are outraged when an American kills his mother, but put yellow ribbons on their cars saying, support the troops, when the government tells an American to put on a uniform and go kill some foreigner's mother. The putting on of a uniform allows morality to be put off. The cult of the uniform is the national religion. It turns atheists into religionists, Jews into war evangelicals, and Christians into idolaters. It must be opposed, root and branch.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. We begin the story now of Johnny Moon, a young boy from Moonrock Lake, as he goes to school on a Friday. Not just any Friday. He goes to school on Friday, November 22nd, 1963. So full of hope and energy, he's going to change his life because he is inspired. He's going to do better. He's going to be a great person, a great American. He's going to the moon. But in a very real sense, it will not be one man going to the moon. If we make this judgment affirmatively, it will be an entire nation, for all of us must work to put him there. President John F. Kennedy, in a speech to Congress, May 25, 1961, we face in the Soviet Union a powerful and implacable adversary determined to show the world that only the communist system possesses the vigor and determination necessary to satisfy awakening aspirations for progress and the elimination of poverty and want. To meet the challenge of this enemy will require determination and will and effort on the part of all Americans. Only if our citizens are physically fit will they be fully capable of such an effort. President John F. Kennedy in Sports Illustrated, December 26, 1960, The Soft American. The President's Council on Physical Fitness recommends hiking as an excellent activity for improving physical fitness and is pleased to note the current interest in that form of exercise. Begin by walking a distance and at a pace that does not result in undue fatigue. Day by day, increase the distance and the vigor. Before undertaking long hikes, be sure you're wearing the proper shoes and socks. A 50-mile hike is a fine challenge for the Marines and other persons who are in good physical condition. The Council is pleased to note the number of people who are sufficiently fit to cover that distance. Washington, D.C. Immediate release, February 12, 1963. Now, let me just say that Johnny was a fat boy, a fat young boy in the third grade, who thought he could fly because he saw things that others did not. Not because he was so special, just that he cared enough to look. It's true, the world is not as we see it. We see it, but it's different, way different, like that, if you want to know the truth. And the truth is that Johnny could in fact fly, but he looked like he could not, and you might assume that he did not, but he did. He looked less like Superman and more like a fat Robin, big boned, wearing buckle overshoes and a snowsuit. But his snowsuit was blue, not red like a Robin, so maybe he was a puppet. A flying blue Sesame Street puppet with special powers. And a corduroy cap with a button on top and a buckle strap under the chin. A fat young third grade boy headed down the steps of his home wearing a snowsuit and buckle overshoes in late November. trying to run as best he could, carrying his sack lunch in one hand, trying with the other to buckle his hat strap under his chin as his mother had just shouted from the doorway, who took off down the sidewalk, shuffling under all that weight, well, which really wasn't all that much, but he thought it was, and that's all that ever really mattered. He was inspired. He wanted to do something about it and do other great things too. Well, he took off from his front porch with his arms up and out, one hand holding that lunch sack like Superman, headed to work. Not that Johnny actually thought he could fly, but he thought some people maybe could, and you never really knew until you put your arms out. He tried it before, so he kind of already knew that much about himself. But he was inspired, and he wanted to try again, so he took off again, his eyes wide and his arms out and up, though already they were getting a little tired with the blood draining down his arms to make his face red. He would try to fly, settle for a little running until he got really tired, and then he would walk. He'd walk as far as he could, but would that be far enough? Well, he did not know, because he'd never done this before, but he was finally going to try. He was going to try. And he smiled. God damn it, he smiled. He chugged down the broken sidewalk across the street and out of sight of his white-painted home as his mother checked the sky, folded her arms across her chest, and ducked her head against the sudden chill to head back inside. He pitched his chin and gritted his teeth and looked straight ahead down that sidewalk that stretched straight to forever, almost. He could just see the railroad tracks that arise in the flat landscape, and he saw the school and the cross atop the church that Johnny told himself, not anybody else, it looked like a radio tower for space aliens. He smiled again, this time only internally, just to himself. Not to brag, in case anyone would see him smile too much or too often and send him to the retard workshop, not real school. But he knew he would make it. He might not exactly fly, but he would do the other things. He would lose weight, get in shape, and maybe go to the moon. He did not have to be able to fly to lose weight or go to the moon. And he would start by walking to school this morning. No problem. He was an American, and he was special. He just was. What could he say? But still, between Johnny Moon and the school and the church were a few blocks of Russians and communists and UFO space aliens and chances that he'd go to hell. And fat blocks and blocks of being out in the wide open and being fat. And there were kids and people with money, people who were not nice. He'd been told that they were there, who told all manners of lies and engaged in deceit and, well, lies. And, deception. And they would just as soon kill you as look at you. That was from either Jack LaLanne or The Tonight Show or I Love Lucy. He was not for totally certain. But Johnny Moon did not let that bother him because he was special. He was an American and a Catholic, too. But positive thinking only gets you as far as that one store that has screwdrivers. Well, that's it. It's over. He tried. It just didn't work. Johnny Moon didn't have what it takes. The Russian would win. Yeah, he did. The communists would be defeated. No, he did not. Just like always. Shit. Oh, no. He looked sideways up and down to see if anybody heard that. Johnny skidded sideways like they did in the Olympics. He stopped. The salt in front of the hammer store helped to grind his boots into the ice. He sucked hard, pulling frosty air into his lungs, which can't be good for you. He let it out in a locomotive stream. He checked himself in the store window. Maybe he was skinnier already. something was not quite right. Something besides his not having what he should have, and if he didn't have it, he might as well not go to school at all. He dug his fat fist into his hides like a Lewis and Clark explorer, pushing all the way in. He would touch his bones and make him feel skinny. Johnny couldn't believe he'd done it again. In fact, he hadn't. It was here. It had to be here. He shoved his right hand into his left pocket, his left hand into his right pocket, then both hands into both of his pockets. This is how the Russians win, Johnny said out loud to himself. It's my fault. Oh, brother, I'm in big, big trouble. Jesus. Oh, sorry. Crossed himself quickly, looked around to see if anyone was around. Johnny waved at Dave and Ism in Dave's Robin's Egg Blue pickup. They're going to pick up the old people at the Catholic nursing home out on 13th Street. Johnny could see Dave pushing on his steering wheel, trying to do beep beep, but sometimes it didn't work if it was cold. Everyone knows they brought the dead old people back to school and shoved them in the boiler in the basement to heat the school. They used to use coal before it got darn expensive. He began walking back toward home, looking down on the sidewalk, over to the gutter, up against the building. He looked up and saw his dad's car coming down the street. Johnny turned around and continued walking toward school as he had been, shooting looks left and right at the sidewalk. Hey, Johnny! Hands waved out tops of windows, quickly pulled inside again. Beep, beep! Johnny raised his chin and his lunch sack at his dad and brothers and sisters on their way to school. Go, Johnny, go! 50 miles! You can do it! Woohoo, Johnny! They think I'm brave for walking to school. I'll never make it, Johnny thought. I'll never be perfect like them. I'm just a big fucking loser. He slapped both hands over his mouth and looked around and shook his head, shuddered at what he just risked. A venial sin for sure. If anyone hurt him, he could even get a mortal. God hears every fucking thing. As soon as Johnny thought his dad and the rest couldn't see him, he stopped again. Shoved his hand again into all his pockets, pants, snowsuit, inside his hat. Why he had to wear a snowsuit in November when it only snowed a little once, he did not understand. And boots, big black 90-buckle shitting farmer engineer boots. He took off his mittens and shook them out, scuffled over to the side, sat down with his back against the blonde bricks. With his cold, wet hands, he worked to unbuckle his boots. Raising each boot way up over his head, he pulled them off, sat there with his red bare feet, and stuck his hands inside his boots to pull out his socks, then shook each boot with both hands. Johnny chewed on a deep breath to consider his life options. Dug into a pocket, retrieved a couple days old piece of candy still in the wrapper. Unable to get all the paper off, he began chewing, decided the paper does not taste. He looked up at the white moon, smiling down or smirking. Johnny waved with one hand, then put both hands up higher and waved. He stopped to dig for more candy. Something was not quite right. It was like in the Wizard of Oz when Johnny sat on the floor staring up at the screen with his eyes almost closed just before he knew the flying monkeys were going to be right there. The sky looked kind of greenish, yellowish, the way his mother had said that always meant a tornado and they had to go to the basement, light a candle, begin the rosary. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, his mother and father would start, and then the children knew when to come in. There are no tornadoes in November. Nah, not usually. Uh-oh. When you do get one, it's a doozy. Someone said, probably Jimmy Purple. Well, he couldn't just not go, sit there, then go home at 3:30, could he? Or maybe there'd be a nuclear war, whatever that was. He would die. Nobody would ever know. He didn't have his 15 cents. Johnny wiped sweat from his forehead with a plump, whitish, reddish, fattish fist. He held several ideas and plans and worries inside his head, concentrating on all of them at once, like a good pinball turn. There were communists everywhere, but you couldn't see them. They could be anyone. You might even live with one or two, like Johnny did. You'd never know until they cut your throat in the middle of the night with that string that goes around the baloney. They can do that. Communists can use every part of the baloney. That's what Jimmy Purple said once. Or you could eat snow and die of radiator poisoning from the nuclear bomb testing. Johnny wished he lived in the olden days when they could eat snow. He did eat snow before. In fact, he ate it almost every day last winter, and he didn't die. The last winter he wanted to die, he couldn't remember now, but he recalled a general malaise, nothing to do in his house, and nobody to play with, old boring toys, and world weariness. This year he wanted to live, because he heard the president on the radio, or maybe it was a television, maybe it was his dad and mom talking about it. But he had heard about it, and he was going to lose weight and walk 50 miles whenever he went anywhere, and he was going to go to the moon. Maybe not really. But, no. Yes, he was going to the moon. Johnny breathed deep. He made a fat fist and lightly tapped the side of his jaw like a fighter, taking a punch like his brother did sometimes. Batten down his buckles. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And took a deep breath to reach the other foot. And rolled over to push up to stand. Johnny spied his gray mittens in the slush and sand where he'd been sitting and went to one knee to get them. As he pulled them on, he buried his nose into the wool like wet mothballs or cats. Johnny's eyes and mouth went wide as the bells chimed a Latin conga. He thought of the world that awaited him, the one solid block of the Catholic school, church, rectory, and convent. Father and his intimate relationship with Jesus and God and otherworldly sisters, none of whom were from around here, all from somewhere else, dressed in their crazy garb, gliding around as if they were on roller skates or skis, asking the children to consider that there was more to this life than what they could see on the tips of their noses. He could do this. He had to do this. Missing Mass, would that be a venial sin or a big one on a school day? What if you were late? What did that count for? He'd ask his brothers and sisters. They'd know. Maybe he'd ask somebody else. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that just about wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you again for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And do remember, it's listener-supported radio, so show them some love. Use that donation button. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks to you, Chuck, for all the work you did to make this all happen. And thanks to our guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wertman, Phil Ferruccio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests. Also, the show archives, newdream.us. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so, good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Mohammed Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
The road is long, with many a winding turn, that leads us to who knows where. Who knows when, but I'm strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. So on we go, his welfare is my concern. No burden is he to bear. We'll get there, for I know he would not encumber me. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. It's a long, long road from which there is no return. While we're on the way to there, why not share? And the load doesn't weigh me down at all.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Cleaning house.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine